Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm J.S. Meyank, the director and co-writer of America 2.0.
And I'm David Carlisle, the co-creator.
David, today's episode is a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We are currently in front of a live audience, and I get to go like this.
For being here. My name is Stacey Wilson Hunt. I'm a journalist based here in Los Angeles covering TV, film, and apparently now podcasts. So thank you for that. How many of you have listened to all the episodes of America 2.0? All right. So you are an informed audience, which is what we love.
Good. Thank you.
So we are recording tonight's event just audio-wise, so I'm going to go down the line and just introduce everyone to make sure our listeners and you know who you're looking at and listening to. So starting from the opposite end, we have Autumn Reeser, who plays Olivia Huff. Jack Coleman, who plays Dan Carrington. Yes. Shanola Hampton, who plays Anna Rossi. Yeah. J.S. Meyank, director, co-creator, and producer. A lot of love for J.S.
Yes.
tonight.
Yeah.
David Carlisle, co-writer, co-creator, and producer.
Pretty good.
Spencer Garrett, producer, also plays Porter Purvis.
Yeah, Spencer.
And next to me, Jeremy Gordon, producer and casting director.
Yeah.
You really invited the right people here tonight.
Yeah.
This is a room full of love. So before we talk about the podcast, I would love for us to get to know each of you a little bit. And I wanted each of you to share with us briefly what your big break in Hollywood was, your first meaningful job in the business that helped launch you to where you are today. So I'll start with you because you're next to me.
Oh, gosh. A meaningful launch in my career. I will say, probably the first time I ever worked in the business, I was a 7th grade U.S. history and English teacher.
Oh, wow.
And my best friend invited me to start a production company with him because that sounded like a sound idea. And long story short, we had a 5-picture deal with a company he was line producing for to make horror films. And I was.
Were they not scary? Is that why
they
you
were not scary? Dolls come to life and kill you.
Oh, okay.
Like that. So I was casting and producing right off the bat after school and on the weekends.
Wow.
But it really enabled me to understand what it was. And then I did that for 2 years full time. Quit teaching, and there I was. So that gave me my launch into the business.
Wow, that's an unconventional launch.
Yes, very much. That's my life.
And Spencer?
I don't know that I've had my big break yet. I'm still waiting for my big break. I didn't anticipate being asked that question, but since you asked it, and fortuitously, there's an amazing woman in this room named Jane Jenkins.
Jane!
Jane, how are you?
I was a young actor. And I got asked to meet a director named Wolfgang Petersen on the set of Air Force One, which was already in, it had been filming for a couple of weeks. And it was to play a young White House aide in Air Force One. And I put a little American flag pin on my suit, which I've now worn probably about 87 times in my career. And I went up to the Doheny Mansion where they were filming, and I met Wolfgang, and he looked me up and down, and he said, I think you're going to work out just fine. And I got the film, and that was a pretty good launching pad. So thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
I get to thank you every time I see you. that was a great moment, a great day.
I love that. How about you?
Well, for me, I have to thank everybody sitting here because it's this.
We are bearing witness to your big break.
Yeah.
We are all
so,
part of this.
A very genuine, sincere thank you to everybody for supporting this podcast and making it the success that it is, because this is real and truly my break into Hollywood.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
It's all downhill from here.
Doesn't get much better.
And JF?
So for me, I think my break was being a Tribeca fellow, I think 5 or 6 years ago, and you know, being a sort of young filmmaker and getting that chance and getting to meet Robert De Niro and having to pitch, you know, my project to him, and then sort of seeing what happens with that, and the script was taken out and so on and so forth.
And
so
what
that
did
was,
he say when you pitched your script to him?
I don't.
It's a little bit. I like
to. Yeah, I honestly don't remember much except for he was one of the nicest people ever. And the first thing he said was just, "Hi, I'm Bob." And it was just one of those like, "No."
You're like, "I know."
But he was really nice. And so that was sort of my jumping off point.
That's great, Chenoa.
Shameless.
Yeah.
Like 9 years ago, I started a wonderful, crazy show called Shameless, and that was my big break. Prior to that, I was a bartender who did recurring roles and guest
stars. You're also
a
great reader for
auditions.
And
I was just, Jeremy, give me a minute.
No spoilers.
And I was an acting teacher and the reader for Jeremy Flash Gordon.
For those horror films.
We've been together ever since. That's been a long time, Jeremy.
Long time ago.
My first break was a little longer than 9 years ago. I was a different Carrington. I was a Stephen Carrington on Dynasty back in.
I was wondering about that last name. Was that
82? I know when he said, he goes, I want you to play this part. I went, Carrington, really? Is that? And he goes,
full
what?
Full circle.
No idea. But that was 1982, I think, something like that. So that was the first real big showbiz break for me.
It's a good one.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
I'm going to count it as the first time I got paid to act. That's a big break. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and so it was, I was on Star Trek Voyager. I was a mute alien. But I just studied Polish mime at UCLA Theater School, so I'm really prepared. Yeah. I think that's why I booked it. Polish mime. I wrote all the Polish mime. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, as I expected, quite a melange of stories, so thank you so much. So I think we'll start with David and JS. For anyone in the audience who hasn't had the chance to hear the podcast or finish it, maybe give us the elevator pitch. When you're promoting this idea, what do you tell people in that wonderful, succinct time period that they love in that elevator moment?
Well, I think the first thing is, what would you do with your $1 million? You know, it's a concept that everybody can understand, and it instantly gets your attention, because it's different than the way anybody else approaches politics. It's about an idea. It's not about the world we live in necessarily. It reflects the world we live in, but it doesn't dwell in the world we live in. And it is the embodiment of something hopeful.
Yeah, so basically our podcast, our 6-episode series, is about Seth Maguire, a first-term congressman who has an absolutely crazy idea on how he wants to change the country, and that is by giving every American citizen $1 million. And so to us, it's a platform to talk about some really big, positive, optimistic ideas, but doing it with a very conventional hook that gets everybody excited to see, well, how will they make that happen?
And was this conceived from the beginning as a podcast, or did it have a different form from the beginning?
So David and I initially thought of the idea, and we thought it would make an incredible TV show. And we actually wrote it as a pilot. But at the time, the political climate was such that, you know, we just got the feedback that probably nobody's interested in doing something political.
And what timing was this in particular? Like around 2 years ago-ish?
Yeah. ish. And we just... we just had this opportunity. We knew what we had in the material, and Jeremy has been my casting director for a lot of my films that I do for a long time, and he read the script and he's like, no, you've got to hear this with actors. So he decided to put this table read together, and that's where the whole thing sort of blossomed. But before we get into that part, I just really wanted to talk about one thing with David on. Do you want to talk about how the idea actually came about?
Oh, well, I mean, everybody already heard it, actually. It's just they don't realize it. So the scene where Seth is knitting and he's listening to right-wing talk radio, well, I wasn't knitting, but I was, I was actually listening to right-wing talk radio, and it was pretty much what you heard in the show. It was two voices back and forth about how we have this enormous national debt problem, and we owe all this money to China. And in my mind, I'm screaming like Patrick did, like, we don't actually owe that much to China. And then they get to this line, and I still remember it, like, but we're never going to pay it all back. We're just going to inflate it away. And I just had this spark in my head, like, oh, that's an amazing idea. And they didn't talk about it, but the first thing I thought was, well, we got to get everybody $1 million.
And so he calls me, and he says, we got to do that. And I'm like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. We should do this as a TV show.
Apparently nothing's too crazy for television now, which is wonderful boon for actors, by the way.
Yeah.
Spencer, tell me how you entered into this equation. I knew you were one of the actors there for the table read that day.
I was. I got asked to be at the table read from Jeremy. I got a call, and I went up, and I read, and it was up at AFI, yeah? Mm-hmm. I think in a big conference room at AFI, and I looked around, and I knew a couple of the people in the room, and I didn't know JS at the time, and I just had a feeling that something good was going to happen. I hadn't read it beforehand. It was a cold read, and at the end of the night, an hour later, I thought, God damn, this is one of the best pilot scripts I've ever read.
And you read a lot of pilot scripts.
And I read a lot of pilot scripts. Okay. Well, this is just one of the most gorgeous pieces of writing that I'd ever read. And I went up to JS afterwards, and I said, I hate to sound like one of those actors, but I said, I love your writing, and I said, if anything happens with this, will you keep me in mind? You know, like, I'm not the first actor to have said that. And we stayed in touch, and we had lunch a couple of weeks later, and we just sort of hit it off, and then we started this, you know, the podcast idea came about, and then we started this journey. Yeah. And from that moment, from the table read to actually being in the recording studio, it was just a little over a year, which is kind of bananas. I mean, it was not that long.
Yeah.
But
and then how quickly after the table read, then did... did you have to then break up the script into these, what we'll call the episodes or installments?
So the table read happened. I met Spencer and Shinola, both of whom were there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our actual cast was there, the table read. Yeah. But David got a call that night. He had no idea there was a table read happening. I didn't want to get his hopes up, so I just did it. And I called him, and what did I say?
Oh, it was, I met Porter.
That's how it happened. I just instantly knew. And I called David and I said, I heard the whole thing. And when the actors were doing it, I could see it. And as a director, you know, most of it happens in my head anyway. And they brought the voices to life in such an incredible way that I said, oh, this could be just as great as a radio drama. And I grew up listening to the BBC radio dramas. Mm. So I just knew that I could do that. And I immediately said, we're going to do it as a podcast. And he's like, well, I don't know how to write a podcast. I'm like, neither do I. We'll figure it out.
There, I got to say, like the end of your question, there are a few times, lucky times in an actor's life where you read a television script or a play or a movie script, and you feel like the character that you're reading is a suit of clothes that you just have to wear, that you just have to put on, and a character that you have to inhabit. And I, after reading Porter Purvis, I just thought, you know, and that's why we, you know, I just...
Well, there are no accidents, you know. There are no accidents. For a reason.
No, I mean, I absolutely believe that that something put me up at AFI that night for a reason.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, the fact that we're here doing this and you guys are all here on a Monday night, it's just, it's surreal. It really is extraordinary. So, you know, thank you.
Well, we're happy to have everyone here. Yeah. Thank you. So I think for a lot of people, and my first question when I hear this is, what are the logistics and the technological logistics involved in this? Because I know very few of the actors, if any, were actually in the room at the same time.
First time we met.
These interactions were being recorded. So how do you begin this process? This, you know, is it like a game where, okay, you do your one and then it's passed to these people? Or are you actually recording people at the same time and then actually editing them together at the end?
Yeah, so... essentially, this whole thing was not only because I wanted to record the actors, but I, you know, we've coined this term in our social medias, TV for your ears, because I really wanted to be for people to listen to it and be able to see the show in their heads. So I was directing everything in my head. And so when I was working with each actor, I would say to them, we had numbered the script, and each of the lines had multiple sort of takes. And I would say, okay, let's take it on a scale of 1 to 10. Let's take it up to 8.
And are you in
eight.
The room with the actors?
Oh, yeah. I was in the recording booth right there with each actor.
In Los Angeles, predominantly.
In Los Angeles. Okay. And they each had actors like Spencer read opposite Kate Walsh and Patrick and Fishburne.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, not a lot of times where we could have the two actors together. So I didn't know what the other actor was going to give in terms of performance, so I had to play the game of Tetris, like, okay, give me all the options, and so when I'm putting it together in the editing room, I have all those things, and so for 3.5 months, essentially, I was recording, listening, recording, listening. So when I actually, our sound editor, our dialogue editor, Rusty, he sort of had this joke, which he told me and Mitch, our incredible mixer, that he was like, you know, you're really weird. I'm like, well, why is that? He said, yeah, Rusty would just call me and say, there's a breath on day 2, take 7. He's like, how do you remember a breath? But that's how detailed.
And are you using Pro Tools for all this? Are you, what's the,
Absolutely.
So you just have like, you know, tons and tons of files with different takes, and you're keeping track of everyone's takes and then mixing them up.
Exactly.
It's also, I gotta say, it's a testament to JS's skill as a director. He was in the booth with all of us, with Kalpana and Catherine and there are other cast members here. He was in the booth with us and giving little adjustments and tweaking, because when you listen to the scenes between Kate Walsh and Patrick Adams, I was reading Patrick's stuff. Their chemistry is extraordinary in this podcast, and they were never in the same room with one another. So the idea that you guys and the engineers were able to find the great nuances and beats to you know, to make them sort of coalesce the way they did is, you know, is really amazing.
So probably a good template for future movies. Just don't ever put them in the same room.
Just edit them together.
I mean, JS is highly organized, but as someone who had never done this before, I mean, these two gentlemen broke down a script into 6 episodes. To put this together could have been mind-blowing to have all of these schedules work out. And we record at the Formosa Group, and Mitch is here.
Where's Mitch?
Mitch, right?
Great job, Mitch.
Helped us. Yeah. But just
it's our recording
so organized.
Yeah.
So well done.
Masterful.
He didn't miss a beat.
And that's amazing.
The results are what you hear.
And Shinola, what were the unique challenges that came with this type of acting that you didn't anticipate? Was there something that, did you think, oh, I'm going to be like one of those animated actors who goes in her sweats and, you know, I only had to work 3 hours. But did you find yourself being tested in a way that you didn't expect?
Honestly, it was so much fun that it didn't feel like work at all. JS has a very calm, one of the things that attracted me to this project, other than I always say yes to Jeremy Gordon. But one of the things that attracted me after I said yes and I did the table read was the energy that I felt from JS. I kind of tried to operate my life on energies and how I feel about a person. The project itself is so good and smart, but he was so passionate, yet humble, and not like the Hollywood types that like make you want to go wash after. So I was like, there's something really special about
you
this.
You knew too at the end of that night.
Oh yeah, I knew at the end of that, and I was like, whatever I can do, you know, sign me up, Anna Rossi,
but you knew
whatever.
Something really cool was going down.
I really, really could feel it. Yeah. And I told that to Jeremy at the time. So when I went into the booth, I already had this feeling. We had such a dialogue over email and telephone calls, and he is very articulate in the things that he wants, so it's really easy to deliver those things because he knows how to speak to actors. So I went in the booth and I just had a good time. I was able to go in some raggedy old sweat, had my glasses on, he's sitting next to me, and we really knocked mine out fairly quickly. It was really a good day at work.
I have a great story about this, because this was one of the most mind-blowing experiences to me. So we had one scene that was about 6.5 pages long. Right? So there's probably 30, 35 lines of dialogue that Shinola has. And my first few takes, I don't even say anything. I just give it to the actor because I want to see what they're doing. And so on one of those scenes, Shinola did something very particular, and I had a bunch of notes. So I was like, okay, well, we can take this page by page, you know, line by line. And she's like, no, let's go through all of it. And I did, and it took about 5 or 7 minutes. Mm. So then I said, okay, Shinola, like, we're just recording. There's no cameras rolling, so we can take this in small chunks. And she's like, no, let's do it. And I said, well, it's 6 pages. I don't even remember the notes that I gave you. And she's like, let's just do it. And she did it, and every single note was in there. And I was just astounded. I was
astounded. Well, that's what comes with casting very well. Mm-hmm. You're casting people who know what they're doing.
You got Kalpana Pott is here, who she plays Gita. Who's
Hi,
lovely.
Gita.
And,
so good.
And Catherine Castro, who plays
Rita Torres.
Amazing scene as Rita Torres. And Stephen Weber,
Justin Green.
And Justin Green. And everybody just came in and just knocked it out of the park. You know, an hour came in and just killed it.
It's amazing. Yeah. And fitting it in everyone's schedules, I'm obsessed with how you. And on another day, I'm going to find out how you actually scheduled everyone. It's
We're still trying to figure that out.
Lots of email.
Jack, I'd love to know who or what you're channeling in your performance as Dan Harrington. Are you drawing from real life figures? Are you drawing from people you've known in your life? Is this a wholesale invention of your own? I'd love to know your inspiration.
I'm not sophisticated enough to channel anything.
You're wearing a velvet jacket.
This is the Armani Black series. Yeah. 15 years old. No, I mean, you know, he's a fun, delicious kind of, you know, slightly reptilian character.
That does come across, yeah.
I mean, you know, he's been 35 years in this business. You meet a couple of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, somebody that's actually really good at his job, but not particularly trustworthy, which is kind of me. So, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, the funny thing is, though, because this is all a voice thing, I had a cold that day, and it was all done in one day.
Oh,
and
wow.
I held a cold that day, so my voice was a little weird. My voice was a little bit higher pitched and a little bit raspy, and I was like, I just kept trying to sort of clear my throat and get down into my more manly, you know. But it was just so well written, you know, you just have to, it's clear what's happening in the scene, and you just need to sort of honor the
It's very lively, too.
Very
it feels like there isn't a moment that goes on too long, or that it's sort of like the pacing is really great.
Yeah.
So probably from the acting
perspective, he's got a great sense of that.
That perfect balance.
I have a quick story about Jack as well, because Jack and I had previously worked together on a film that Jeremy cast. So I had worked with Jack before. And when right after the table read, once I realized that I was doing this, I just knew that, you know, Dan was going to be Jack. And I love writing for actors. And so I had asked about a year ago, Jack, if you could do anything, what's like one role that you haven't done? And he was like, well, I love politics. I'm obsessed with politics. I would have been great on The West Wing or, you know, Veep or, you know, some of those shows. And he's like, I want to be in this political thing. And so through this, as David came up with the character, and then once, as soon as I started talking to him, I'm like, oh, it's got to be Jack. And then once I told him, he said, the first thing he said when he read it, he's like, Carrington, really? I had no idea what that meant. I was like, do you have a problem with the name?
You have to be of a certain age, that's facing.
Wow. Well, but, also the Jerry Maguire references to Seth Maguire, you had said that wasn't intentional as well. So there's a lot of kismet going on in this situation.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Autumn, I was curious. The show is obviously about politics, but to me, in a way, that's actually soothing. That was the word. I felt soothed by this fantastical sort of, you know, representation of our politicians. To what degree did idealism and the themes of idealism affect your interest in the piece and sort of inspire you along the way?
I mean, for me, I think what mostly interested me is just, I do a stage show that's a podcast called Thrilling Adventure Hour for the last 10 years. So I'm really interested in audiobooks and podcasts as a method of storytelling.
Yeah.
So for me, that's what attracted me, of just working with the voice. And how do you tell a story in a way that cuts through? That's that's my main way of media consumption is podcasts and Audible, you know? And so for me, that was the main attraction, more than the political aspect of it, to be totally honest, just to play with people in that world. Although Jack and I are just meeting tonight for the first time, and I just listened to our scenes together for the first time today. So that was unexpected.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's good. We have good chemistry. Nice to meet you.
Again, great casting if the actors had chemistry and they didn't even know it.
It's also
that's pretty amazing.
A tribute to the writing and to the editing.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to make the voices sound like you're in the same room at the same time.
Yeah, it's trippy.
Is hard enough, let alone to actually sound like you're talking to each other.
And to trust the other actors that they're going to show up as what is written, which they did. It played exactly as
written. And you can get one actor playing it at an 11 and another actor playing it at a 4. And then you can't use that.
No, but JS brings it all to the center.
Right.
Yeah. And there was one scene at the beginning, the opening of episode 4, which is the Porter Purvis introduction, hopefully a fan favorite, I think. it's one that we get like the most feedback about. But there's 4 people in that scene. All 4 were recorded months apart in different studios.
Wow.
And like when we assembled it together, we're like, oh my God, this is a magic trick. This really
what did,
is.
And you were going to say, what did Lawrence Fishburne, who
just tell the chemistry
yeah,
story.
Yeah, so.
He's working on Black-ish today and couldn't be here, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but.
So I had the opportunity to go and actually play the episode for Mr. Fishburne. Spencer and I went to his place and we're playing it, and he listens to it and he says, look, you know, not to take anything away from your directing, which is fabulous, you know, but you just can't fake chemistry. Like Patrick and Kate, what they have there, it's so spectacular. That only happens, you know, when you have 2 people who know each other so well. And I'm smiling, and he goes, why are you smiling? And I said, well, I mean, I agree with you, except for the fact that they've never met each other. And he just sort of looked down at us, he's like, get out of here. Yeah.
And Lawrence was so... We were only going to play him an episode or 2, and we ended up playing the entire series for him.
Yeah.
And my favorite quote of his was, you know, which is to this day, as he said, it's an iron fist in a velvet glove. in terms of the politics, because it's a show. It's a political show for people who don't necessarily care about politics.
Right.
It's so soothing to
the ears. Or people who don't want to hear about politics.
Or don't want to hear about politics,
right.
But...
But still, like, the characters and the themes
yeah.
and the tone.
It doesn't hit you over the head with one partisan blue-red thing or another.
Right.
But it has a potent message, yeah. But it does it in a really subtle way, which is I thought his quote was
And it was so great seeing him sort of closing his eyes and just leaning back and listening to it, and at the end he said... You know, this isn't a podcast, it's an experience. You made me see every moment. Yeah. And I was like, all right, thank you, everybody.
Like,
this is the highlight of my life. I'm done here.
And then you took the blue pill and I took the red
pill.
Yeah. We can't tell you what happened.
Yeah.
And anyone can answer this, but I'm curious, what was the most difficult part of this process that you didn't anticipate or didn't plan for, that you just thought, wow, I wish somebody really would have told me about X before you
scheduling. Putting that together, because honestly, the cast was a dream. I mean, we got so lucky. Every person we went to said yes. That never happens. And not only did they say yes, but they showed up in such a spectacular way for us to, you know, I was directing, so I was in the booth every day. But David wasn't there for a lot of it. And when we would get together and listen to it, I would just see the smile on his face.
And
it was actually really good, because that gave me an outside perspective. I mean, the weird thing about it is we're writing partners. And, you know, a lot of times people ask, like, so how do you settle arguments? And we just look at them and we're like, we don't have arguments. We never.
Wow.
And so we would listen to 7 takes, both circling our individual ones. And then we'd look at each other and we're like, Two. There was no.
But you're talking about doing that 500 times.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
and
we
never disagreed. It was always the same take every time.
Wow.
It was just so evident.
Incredibly
with this
free
cast.
Of drama. Yeah. This entire experience.
That makes it kind of boring, though. We need some drama. Like, I need to know that.
Season 2.
Oh, there will be.
What were the big fights and big disagreements? It sounds like you didn't have
just
any.
Just the spitting water in your face.
Oh. Yes. So.
I knew there was at least one.
There's a running gag where people either spit water into Seth's face or throw a drink. And when we were recording it, we tried doing it, and there was a trash can that the actress, like, first it was Kalpana, who plays Geeta, and then Meng Na plays Helen Chan, and Kate throws the drink. So we had the running gag, and we were going to do it, and then... A recorder said, it sounds like you're spitting into a bucket. It doesn't sound right. So I wasn't going to have the actor spit on the reader. So I just said, all right, you know what? Let's do it. And she was like, no. I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let it never be said that I'm not right there
Took
in the trenches with my actor.
How many times did you get spat upon?
A lot. 7 or 8. I will say, like,
but
Kate.
Multiple
takes. And Kate Walsh throwing the drink in my face. I was like, okay, you know, that's a bucket list item right there. But what was funny was Lorianne, who couldn't be here today, but is just our incredible narrator and sort of plays Tamsin, the reporter character. She came and she did her part, and then she just goes, I'm curious how the spit take thing is going to work. And Jeremy was like, well, let me show you. And he shows her the video, and she just sort of puts out her lip and she's like, well, that sounds like quite fun. I'd like to do
she
it.
She wanted to have one too.
And I said, but Lorianne, your character doesn't do it. And she's like, but that looks like so much fun. So,
and when you say that with an English accent, it's
so
that's why she got to do it.
Yeah. So we did that as well.
See,
and that
you're making all these actors' wishes come true along the way.
Absolutely.
I get it. And David, what would be your ideal scenario for sort of the next step of, like, the next iteration of America 2.0?
Well, I mean, I don't think we're on to the next iteration yet, because we're not done with this one.
Right.
So we told a story here, but I think, as everybody knows, that's not the end of the story. So this was very much season one.
Yeah.
We are not done telling this story yet.
Okay. Yeah. So what's next?
Well,
that
I mean,
was an ellipsis if I ever heard
I one. Know. Yeah. We're really exploring a lot of different avenues for what we want to do. I think, you know, we would love to see if this could, obviously we wanted to a season two, but, you know, the journey started as a TV pilot. So we would love to explore those options, and I think we'll see. But I mean, given what we were able to accomplish, I mean, we did TV for your years. The biggest thing I get when I tell people, oh, I have this podcast, and they listen to it, they're like, no, dude, it's not a podcast. And I'm like, thank you. You know, that's the first. I take it as a compliment because people think podcast that it's talking heads, and that's not what this is. That everybody says, I was able to see the entire show. Mm. And I feel that that's a great, if nothing else, proof of concept for people to see that.
Yeah.
And for the actors, what kind of response have you gotten from friends, fans, people you've known in the business who have listened to this on the subway or as they're driving?
That's we have our Crazy Ant Films podcast major fans here. We have Riley Smith, who's an actor who just found us randomly on Twitter, and they
I worked with Riley on the show Scorpion a few years ago, and he and his family discovered the show, and they became super fans of the show. Mm. And where did you guys come in from, the Crazy Ant guys? From Biloxi, Mississippi.
Yeah.
They flew in.
Awesome.
I mean, they've been unbelievable super fans on social media for us.
So great.
Like you wouldn't believe.
And how important has social media been in terms of getting the word out?
Yeah,
and it's interesting. I went to go finish up the season of Shameless in Chicago, and we have fans, you know, that are crazy about Shameless, and they're in the front, and I'm coming to sign, and the guy's like, yeah, I'm like, oh, you love Shameless? He's like, no, America 2.0, you have no idea, it's so good, please tell whoever created it that it's good. I was like, I kind of want to video you right now, so I can send it to JS. He was like, no, really, it's so good. And then I was like, JS, you have to understand that this fan was like, I'm all for America 2.0, Shameless, whatever, but America 2.0, that is a joy. So yeah, it's been a really, really nice response, and I think when you tell people that you did a podcast, they're like, you did what now? Right. And then you're like, just listen to it in your car, throw it on. Mm-hmm. And what has happened every single time that any of my friends or family or people that I just told about, they put it on for a minute, they put it on to be curious about what is this, and they weren't expecting much.
Right.
By the end of it, you get a, I couldn't turn it off. Yeah. I wanted to get back in my car and listen to it, and then I wanted to listen to it in the house. And so people, once they like start listening, and I think what really, really, and this is what happened for me, because I didn't know what to expect either. I mean, I know I have a great voice, so I was like, Anna Rossi's gonna be great. No, I'm just kidding. But when I turned it on and I could hear like the plates and the tea being poured and the I was like, what the hell is this? This is amazing. Yeah. And I even told JS, I was like, you created these sounds that made me feel like I was there. And I think that I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I think we're special in that way, that we really make people feel like they are there. And that's what makes it so special.
It created an atmosphere. And even I reached out early on to friends of mine that were on the West Wing, Bradley Whitford, Richard Schiff. And we asked them if they would tweet about it for us, and they both said, well, you know, we want to hear it first, and so they they listened to it, and it obviously has echoes of the West Wing, and every single person to a person said, you created this atmosphere, you created this world. Hmm.
Has Aaron Sorkin heard it?
I don't know.
God. Aaron Sorkin, are you listening?
No, but I think the one big thing, I think the difference, because a lot of people ask me, like, what's different in this? And I say, I directed every moment. Yeah. Nothing is a coincidence. I would sit with Rusty and Mitch, and I would say, okay, now this is what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. We need this. We need that. So those layers are, I'm set decorating in the moment. I'm folding. We're doing all those things. So none of that is accidental. You see it because I saw everything and I was like, okay, we need this. We need the baseball game in the backdrop. You know, we need this kind of thing going through. And I think that's the directing part of it that I think separates it from a lot of others, where there was a point of view.
Are you actually storyboarding in a traditional
sense? In my head.
Okay.
every single person who's listened to this that has commented to me said, I want to see it. Yeah. Now I've heard it, and now I want to see it. I want to see these people. I want to see these characters. I hear the clickety-clack of the heels on the Capitol steps, and I hear all of the sounds. I want to see this come to life. And when I, after the table read, I sent the pilot script to Dana Bash, who from CNN, and her response was, which is a lovely compliment, and she said, spot on. And she's something that knows a little bit about Washington, D.C. politics.
Right.
And she said, this is absolutely spot on. And her colleague, Mark Preston, who covers politics for CNN, And they said, you nailed it.
Have you gotten other feedback from politicians and people actually working in D.C., suffering through this crazy life?
I don't know.
Any of the actors, have you?
A lot of Dana's colleagues from CNN and, and from that world have listened to it, and they've all, you know, they've all loved it. So, and they've all subscribed, more importantly.
Well, that's it. So, and then speaking of that, the subscription model and the making money part of this business, because, you know, everything has to make money at some point. How is this monetized? How is this making people money? How is it making you guys money? How does this work?
So yeah, how is that?
Yeah, I think for us, a lot of this was, you know, we were going to do it and just release it on SoundCloud, and hopefully, you know, 50 people, 50 of our friends would listen to it. But then we had this opportunity. You know, I'm lucky that as a writer-director, I'm repped by UTA, and they listened to this thing, and my agents were just like, oh, this is something different.
So you made it
special.
First, and then they listened.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, because I mean, I just wanted to do it. I didn't want to sort of talk, you know, because also you'd say podcast, and they'd think, well, it's just you talking about the thing. So I played them a couple of scenes, and they were just like, oh my god.
Agents, you know, need a lot of evidence to believe. Yes. Stuff.
Right. I think everybody on the other side does, you know, because I mean, and I understand that. So they listened to it, and they just completely came on board, and UTA has a dedicated podcast department, which was fantastic. So they took it out, and then we met with, well, actually, one of the funny stories is, I won't say who it was, but one of the people said, passed on it, saying, I'm not sure Americans are ready to be political right now, which I was just like, this is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. But then we found these incredible partners in this company called Dax and Global, and they came on board, and they helped us get it out there, and, you know, we got some amazing sponsors in Geico and ADT. So that's sort of how we did it, but for us, mostly, it was just really getting it out there and for people to be able to listen to it as much as possible.
So really having the public,
correct,
you know, make the decision.
Yeah.
Which they did, it sounds like.
Which they did.
We have some time for audience questions if anyone is inspired to ask.
Can we do just
ask
a quick shout out to our other actors?
Oh, sure.
That are
yes,
here.
Please.
If you're an actor.
Yeah, roll over the
part.
Yeah.
And you also look so
stand.
Lovely, we want to show
I can
how
see you,
how
you, Laura. Mark Atterbury, where are you?
Yeah.
Mark is down there.
And a phenomenal cast.
Well done, everyone. What are they most proud of, whether it's a moment or some accomplishment in the creation of the podcast?
That'd be you, JS.
There was a day when we were all texting each other, the four of us, and we were looking at it was like looking at the tote board on a telethon and seeing the numbers go up and up and up, and all of a sudden, like, what? We're number one in,
you know,
like, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was bananas.
And tell us those stats as they stand today in terms of where globally.
It's something like 550,000 podcasts that exist out there in cyberspace. Whoa. And we were in the top 10 in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. In performing arts.
Performing
we
arts.
Got to there.
And number
and,
one
know,
in France.
Canada,
number
UK.
Three in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah, for me, I think that the moment, because it was such a culmination, was getting the banner on Apple.
Yeah.
Because that's when people started to find it who didn't know anything about us. And we just immediately saw this meteoric rise, and it just felt like, oh my God, you know, the next one over is Serial, and the next one over is Dr. Death. And some
and,
of these
and how
that
soon
are,
into the podcast run did you get
this
the
was the fourth week.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we
I also
we
think the Morpheus you know, effect.
The Morpheus
was
effect
a big, was
never
a big
hurts.
Deal. When Fishburne's episode with Patrick aired.
Yeah.
The
Morpheus effect.
It there was a groundswell.
Yeah.
You know.
So that was, you know, it felt like a moment. When
and
that
have
happened.
You gotten response in terms of global audiences, people who aren't American, don't
Pair 2.0?
Yeah.
Don't give it to
So we have a chef in France who loved it so much. He's like, I want to name a jam after your show. So, Pois 2.0, that's, you know, we get the Pear Jam. I mean, I've gotten messages from people in Argentina, in Guam, in the UK, Canada, Australia, South Africa, India, just like all over the world. And that was the thing that surprised me the most. I thought this was a quintessentially American story mm-hmm. that wouldn't really travel. Mm. Contrary to that, there's a massive appeal for, especially for something that's positive and optimistic.
Right.
And
right.
We just keep
and is
going.
There, and this is, I truly don't know the answer to this. Are podcasts ever translated? Like a narrative podcast like this, would it actually be translated in other languages?
I don't think they are, but I did get a message from someone in China who said, would you want to do a version in China? And I was like, no, I don't think so. And he's like, I've already translated the first episode. Do you want me to send it to you? And I was like, thank you so much. You took so much time and effort. I don't think we have any use or we can use it, but thank you so much.
Wow. And
yeah, it was.
Well, that's a big audience potentially to right. Break into at some point.
Yeah.
Were there any other questions? And don't feel pressured.
Way to piss off the Chinese, James.
I was very thankful.
Well, in the back. Yes, just feel free to stand up and just speak loudly.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Hi. I just ran to Spencer in the lobby last week. Listen to the podcast, amazing. But I'm curious to know, like, one of the things I really love about the podcast is the length. It's 15 minutes. Has that helped or hurt you trying to sell the show as a television show?
Is your thought that it's too short or too?
No, I love it.
Yeah. Oh,
he said he loves the length of being short.
I really love the length, but like, it's also not quite half-hour television.
It was a tough decision for us in the beginning, how long to make this, because we had to gauge what are people's attention spans mm-hmm. when they're not looking at Minuscule. Anything. Yeah. You know, we're not talking heads.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I agree.
So now you're our core demo then.
Yeah, I mean,
me
and it's really nice to hear you say that.
Yeah.
I do think, you know, there are some people that probably would like for it to be longer, and we love those people because, you know, hey, maybe it'll be longer soon.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was our really first very hard decision of how long do we make these episodes? And we kind of thought, like, all right, well, let's make them increasingly longer as it goes. You know, as we get a little bit of a fan base, we can raise the length of each episode.
About 18 minutes toward the end?
Yeah, they get almost 20 at the end. Okay. So, I'm glad it worked.
Yeah.
But,
And I want to tack on to that because I had that very conversation with Jack over text, and I remember at a certain point he just wrote back with a mic drop text. It just said in all caps with periods in between, always leave them wanting more. And I just remember that moment. I was like, yeah, that's the answer. That's better than somebody saying, episodes are too long. I would much rather, the episodes are so short, I want more.
Yeah. Then
they can
that's
always
an
go
ideal
on
start.
To the next episode.
That's right.
Yeah. And then when they get to the end, they're like, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
I'm excited about a season two. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what you guys come up with.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. You can follow us on social media. On Instagram, we are at America 2.0 Podcast, and on Twitter, at America 2.0 Pod. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And please check out our merchandise. We have America 2.0 hats, mugs, and t-shirts available on our website at reinventingtomorrow.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.